SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back hour two on this Tuesday, and another of the regular visitors, it seems, these last several weeks and for an extended period. Brad Cox, last week we were congratulating him about the initial grade one Monomoy girl. He followed that up, not with another grade one. He made some tries, undoubtedly, but the pair of stake wins Friday and Saturday, both impressive in their own ways, and one was pricey. In fact, the prices on both were pretty good. High North, I thought was a nice number, and when it came to Sassy Sienna, I told Brad Cox I was surprised she went off as high a price as she did. Brad, congratulations on another great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Sassy Sienna, I told you. Our partner Ed Kelly, who's in on our filly, Carlisle Bell, he's got a portion, and in between races, Sassy wins the fantasy and did it impressively. Talk about her, her progress.
Yeah, she's been knocking on the door in some stakes and graded stakes, and we got her graded black type in the Honeybee there at Oaklawn back in March, and she's obviously been training well, and we've liked her all along. We really thought she was going to be really tough in the Alcibiades last fall at Keeneland. Broke from the outside. Had a good trip, a wide trip, but a good trip, and ended up fourth that day. She's just been a filly that, broke her maiden on the grass, was third in a stake to get some black type at Saratoga last summer. But she's been a filly that, never really missed a beat since we got her in last year from the McCathens. She's very forward and very sound, and taking the training we've thrown at her and very well, and it was good to get the graded stake one under her belt. Like I said, she's been knocking at the door in some stakes, and she had her head down when it counted. I know that because it was very, very close. At first I thought we won the race, and then I was like, well, when it's that close, you don't want to too much, and it took a minute or two for him to put the take the photo sign down. But she come out on top. It was good for her, and good for the connections, and she earned her way into the Kentucky Oaks.
Now this group and the way the race unfolded, what were the discussions with Gary Stevens and the approach? She was down inside, and mm-hmm. It feels like she's been most successful when she's part of the pace.
Yeah, no doubt. Last time, I don't really know as far as the Honeybee goes. Yeah, the filly Amy's Challenge, she obviously was kind of setting a pretty fast pace, which she did again on Friday in the fantasy. But I thought in the Honeybee, she kind of caught everybody off guard just kind of getting out there. I mean, I think at the four, we were 13 lengths behind, but we were really only four lengths off the horse that was running second. It wasn't like we were really completely out of the equation. I thought we learned a lot about her in the Honeybee, just because she was, only one or two horses beat going up the backside, and she passed horses down the lane, ended up third. And, I think, another 16th of a mile would have easily been second in that race. But I think we learned a lot about her that race, talked it over with Gary, and we thought, let's be a little more involved today. Especially being down on the one hole, Gary did a good job of saving ground around first turn. And, at first going up the backside, I thought, well, we may be too close to the hot pace. And I thought, these horses from the back, from behind us are going to come running, which obviously they did. Filly of Cassie's that we just nipped out obviously was not, pressing us or anything. She was further back than we were. So, they did close. you know, it worked out really well. I mean, like I said, Gary saved ground around both turns, and you know, like she had her head down at the right time, so it worked out well. But you know, to being down on the inside, yeah, the plan was to be a little more a little more forwardly placed early in the race as opposed to the start before.
Yeah, she's an interesting filly from a breeding standpoint too. She's a midshipman and out of a Pleasant Tap mare, a Tap for Gold, and the distance, the mile and an eighth, coming up for the Oaks, you would think would suit her. She's got plenty of stamina underneath and speed on top, middle distance speed, and she's also obviously a pretty hardy filly. She's been running without basically monthly without an interruption. That was her ninth start of her career.
Yeah, she's very, very sound. Like I said earlier, since we've got her in, she's never had a setback. I mean, she's been a filly with, you know, from the get-go, we breeze every 6-7 days, and, you know, once we got her to the races. But, yeah, she's very sound. Like you said, she's pretty much raced monthly. And the mile and eighth shouldn't really be an issue. Gary, the first time he rode her, Oaklawn, made that comment. He'd come back, he said, this filly, get a mile and eighth. He said she'll run the distance. She's a scopey filly, plenty of leg underneath of her scope. So, you know, a mile and eighth shouldn't be an issue for her at all. And you know, she obviously has, you know, she can be close to the pace. So, you know, I think she definitely fits the prototype of what you'd call, I guess, an Oaks horse, a filly that could go a mile and an eighth the first part of May. So distance shouldn't be an issue at all.
Well, this was a step forward too, looking at Figs, and she's advancing and making steady progress, and you won't obviously have to do too much with her between now and the fourth.
No, we'll probably just breeze her one time. I mean, it's back in 3 weeks. Oaks is back in 3 weeks, 21 days, and you know, like you said, if she's not fit now, she's never going to be fit after that, especially that taxing race. She did come out in good order. We got her back here at Churchill. She went back to the track this morning, returned to the track, good order, sound, moving well. So that's obviously the main thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking right now just one breeze before the Oaks, probably the Saturday before, 6 days out, maybe 7 days out. We'll just kind of see how, you know, this time of year in Kentucky, you're going to watch your weather forecast as much as you do your training charts. So, you know, the weather, depending on the weather and stuff, she'll probably have, you know, just a half mile, 6-7 days out from the Oaks, and we'll see how it goes.
Well, let's turn our attention to Saturday and High North. And this was exactly, it seems, what you were looking for. And he was even at 20-whatever-to-1 in the Rebel, he was a horse that a lot of people were kind of watching and thought, out of the Risen Star, he might take another step forward. Instead, he kind of kicked back to neutral and didn't really kind of just ran around there, I mean, as they say. And you put the blinkers on and gave him a little bit of a class relief, and you end up with the kind of performance you were hoping for. He looked really good, especially starting to pull away down the late stages.
Yeah, that's Colt. You know, we've liked him a long time. Obviously, we took him up to Saratoga last summer to start him, and he's, you know, he knocked heads with some really good 2-year-olds. I mean, obviously, 2-year-old champion in Good Magic. He was the day he was second, we were fourth in that maiden race, beating maybe a half a dozen behind him. You know, and he kept really good company. Like I said, his first two starts in New York, and then I thought he ran a really good maiden race here last fall. Was broke from the outside. Corey Lannery rode him that day, kind of had to use him around the first turn to establish position, and did fight on to win the race. Thought his race in the Jockey Club was really good, considering he had a lot of trouble. So, you know, I mean, no secret, we thought this was our Derby horse. And, you know, we thought, you know, we'll have 2 races, 3 races, you know, and hopefully we can make the Derby. And, you know, it just didn't happen. You know, we were a decent race in the Risen Star. He had a ground-saving trip, just didn't really fire down the lane. Maybe he got a little tired, whatever. And then come back in the Rebel, and we really thought he was set up for a huge race in the Rebel, second race off a layoff, and it just wasn't there. I mean, like you said, if anything, just running a very neutral race and just didn't show us anything. Just kind of chased the set med pack. I thought Gary Stevens rode him that day. I thought he gave him an excellent ride, put him in great position, and just like you said, just run neutral. Didn't run terrible, but didn't run well enough to take the next step or go on to the Arkansas Derby. We had talked about shortening him up. We talked about blinkers. We talked about allowance races. There was a allowance race we kind of had. We're looking at there at the end of Oakland. Didn't go. So we ended up in this stake. And obviously it was the right move. I think the blinkers did help. But they're starting to be some question mark as to how far he wants to go because he trained so well, and I thought, well, maybe the horse just doesn't want to go around two turns. And we did have the half-sister, Benner Island, which won a grade two going 7/8, so that was kind of in the back of my mind thinking, maybe he's like, taking after the mare, and the mare, I believe, also won a grade two going 7/8 as well. So, and he's a Midnight Lou, which Midnight Lou was a good, middle distance horse. So, but this goal did show Saturday that he can't handle two turns. He handled the mile and the 16th and Florent. First thing he did when he came back, said, this horse galloped out really well. So, and he did, you watch a replay, it looked like he was full of run. But, I think the blinkers helped him a lot. And, like you said, class relief, obviously that never hurts. And he's a colt that, moving forward, we're hoping he has a big 3-year-old year, obviously the rest of the year.
Is there some Preakness consideration going on?
I'm sorry, Steve, what's that?
Is there some Preakness consideration?
I'd say, he's nominated to the Triple Crown. He did come out of the race well. He's another horse, colt that's back at Churchill. We're going to look right now, I think, at the Pat Day Mile, the Peter Pan, and possibly the Preakness. I think those are the three races we're going to kind of eyeball and just kind of see how they're coming up, who's going where, and, once again, how he's doing. Appeared to have come out of the race in good order. He'll go back to the track tomorrow, but we're pleased with the performance and like I said, we've been looking for that race for the last 3 or 4 months, and he finally gave it to us. So we know it's in there. We thought it was in there. It is in there, and hopefully we can he'll show up next time at obviously a little tougher venue and see what happens.
I made the point that yesterday and also on Sunday, reflecting on the weekend and the racing festival, what a uniquely Arkansan flavor it particularly Saturday had. And when it comes to High North, this is a perfect example. John Ed Anthony, who has had so much success over the years, and the short leaf stable, his current incantation, and really one of four very notable sets of Arkansas-based connections to win on Saturday.
Yeah, no, it was big for Mr. Anthony. He definitely supports the racing there at Oaklawn. He was obviously there. That was great. We won a race for him earlier in the week. So it's always special to win for him there at Oaklawn. It's obviously his home track or home state. So definitely supports the program there. And it worked out really well, and I was glad he and his family were able to, be there in person for the victory.
Well, and of course, the wider known moniker Lob Lolly, of course, was the first go around for John Ed Anthony, and has had really great success. And it is fun to come to Arkansas and see all the namesake, the Pine Bluff and Prairie Bayou and all the places in Arkansas that are synonymous. It's kind of cool, and was happy for him. A couple of other notes before we wish you luck going forward. Talk about Tiger Moth and the try in the Apple Blossom, and last week we also looked ahead to Mr. Misunderstood in the Maker's Mark, and of course everybody had to look at Heart to Heart's Tail all the way around.
A lot of horses there.
Yeah.
Mr. Misunderstood, I thought, ran an extremely very, very good race. Compromised himself at the break, kind of missed the break a little bit, and obviously against those type of horses, that can't happen. Florent did a good job, saving as much ground as he could. But was beaten, two and a half lengths for everything, finished sixth. I thought it was a little better trip. We could have been a little bit more competitive. Just, you know, like I said, just really compromised himself at the break. And that's something that this horse has done in the past. There's been times where, you know, he's broke, a step slow, and he obviously did the other day. And once again, you can't do that against grade one horses when you're stepping up. But, you know, he's a horse that, you know, we brought him back in 3 weeks. We'll probably slow down with him a little bit. Went back to the track today, and he's moving well, and we'll keep him in training, but we won't be in a big hurry to run him back, get a little freshener after that one. I think he's going to have a good summer, big summer, spot him around throughout the Midwest. But, moving forward with him. And then Tiger Moth, you know, she run into a really good field of horses, good group of mares. She run a race, just wasn't quite good enough, obviously, and we're going to Mr. Gunther is going to breed her, but she will stay in training for a while.
Nice.
So he's made the decision to breed her, and we'll obviously bring her back and race. And we've had, luck with 4 or 5 mares that have been bred and in foal, and bring them back, and they perform perform well in foal. So that's kind of what we're going to do right now. I don't really have a race picked out for right now, and we'll just, see if we can get her in foal. And I'm not sure actually who they're breeding her to, but we'll probably learn that information over the next week or so and figure all that out and bring her back and, hopefully find some spots for her and add to her list of achievements. She's been a very solid mare, and another one that's been running, a solid year and a half with us. And, she's 6, and it's time to go to the breeding shed. So, hopefully we can get her back and add to her resume before we call it quits.
Well, ideally, John Gunther takes her home and ultimately, and whoever he's going to breed her to, and ideally you get yourself a Justify or a Vino Rosso in a couple of years.
Yep, that's it. It makes it look awful easy, I know that.
Yeah.
He and his daughter do a tremendous job of matings, and they do it themselves, and they do a tremendous job with their matings and their broodmare band, and selling horses and racing horses, and very, very good operation they have there at Glenwood Farm there for sales. I know they're in the international scene as well, but obviously they have the farm and for sales Glenwood that they do a tremendous job at.
Very much has been in the spotlight, obviously, this winter and into the spring, and heading toward Derby and heading toward Kentucky and also to Indiana Grand, getting their season going. And you're operating on 3 fronts, basically, or maybe we could just say the Churchill base and New York. Looking ahead, let's touch on a horse or two. Unbridled Atlantic, going to run today, I think, at Indiana, right?
Yeah, she's in a maiden special at Indiana opening day there. It's the only starter we have. But, Philly's has some speed. So, 5.5 on the dirt, you need that if you're going to be competitive. So she's got a really good mare in Brattle Sydney. This is our first shot with any of her offspring. And, Philly, like I said, she has speed. Hopefully, speed will be good today at Indiana. That seems to be her weapon will be, her gate speed. So, she's a filly that could improve maybe on the grass in time. Right now where we're racing, they don't offer any maidens. In this part of the country, we don't have any maidens sprinting on the turf right now available. So we thought, we've taken her as far as we can take her in the morning, so let's just run her on the dirt. And, a month or two down the road when the turf racing starts or sprint races start, we'll give her an opportunity there, because that mare was a very solid mare. No, they actually have a race named after a Churchill, 5/8
yep.
on the turf, Unbridled
yep.
Sydney. So, she obviously accomplished a lot to get a race named after her. So we're hoping this filly, mature and develop. And we're just, I'm not saying we're giving her a race today. We're in it to win it. But, she's a filly that, probably in the future will be a little better sprinting on the grass.
Well, I also want to ask about a Keeneland starter that's coming back for a second start, and a filly that went favored at Fairgrounds and ran into a hot Cassie runner as it happens that day, and maybe Wicked is a mizzenmast, and that dam I remember from Christine Jenks in Chicago, something Wicked, and she was okay. She was an Illinois bred, and Tell us about the second timer coming up at the end of the week.
Really nice filly. We like her a lot. I mean, obviously, I guess the word was out with her at the fairgrounds. I believe she may have been the only first-time starter in that race that day, and she went off favorite. But she's a filly that's shown us a lot of the mornings. She's a good mover. She's mizzen mast out of, like you said, a good mare. That mare's produced a really good filly. Money's on Charlotte. Which Kelly Breen had.
Kelly Breen,
I believe she was a greatest stake winner, very accomplished filly, very talented, and she is a half there out of the same mare, the Christine Jinks mare. But, you know, it's obviously a solid family. This filly's very athletic, good mover. We look for her to move forward. It looks like it's a solid race at Keeneland on Friday. So, you know, she'll have to step up, and I think it's very possible she could. She's based at Churchill, and like I said, she had a good last couple works out of that race. Been really really nice. So, you know, we expect her to move forward, and she'll need to move forward to get the job done, and we think it's very possible she could. So we're looking forward to her.
Well, and I do want to ask about two winners the past week that people you know, may have seen just on the weekend cards or leading into the weekend. That exclamation point the other day at Keeneland last week looked okay, and Jess I Am off the turf on Sunday at Keeneland, and a nice performance.
Yeah, exclamation point. I mean, this colt we thought we got him last summer. We thought he could run. He shouldn't run. Backed off of him a little bit, gave him some time. Came back to Oakland this winter, and you know, first time out going three quarters, we were giving him a race, but he kind of got caught down inside. We're hoping he could set off a horse. He just went to the front and just kept going, or kept on that day and broke his maiden. He's 3-for-3. He's a nice colt. Anytime you're 3-for-3 and you know, at the level of racing he's been running at, he's obviously shown that he's, you know, has some quality. So we're excited about him. I kind of felt like we needed to back him up. He obviously, his second start was a mile. He got the job done, but I honestly was not super pleased with the race. I thought mentally he didn't handle it that well. So I thought, you know, let's just move up to the Beard course. The race was there at Keeneland. We shipped him 2 days before the race from Oakland to Keeneland. He handled everything fine. He did have the opportunity to train at Keeneland a couple days, and he handled everything really well with schooling. He's a very immature horse. He's a half to Classic Empire. I don't think he's near as tough to handle as Classic Empire from what I But he can be a handful at times. He's a nice colt. Hopefully, you know, we're definitely going to step back up into – we're going to go into Stakes Company next, probably around two turns, kind of looking maybe at the Sir Barton, the Pimlico, something like that. But,
nice.
You know, obviously, for a three-year-old, he's exhausted his allowance conditions for the time being, and we'll have to step up into Stakes, and, you know, hopefully he'll take that next step forward. So, and as far as Jess I Am, I mean – you know, we got, you know, he would have been competitive on the turf. I was kind of glad to see it come off, to be honest with you. He ran some really good numbers at the fairgrounds this winter on and off the turf. So he's obviously a dual surface horse, but Sean Bridge-Mahan did a good job of, you know, putting him on the lead, letting him kind of do things, letting him think he's having his way. That's kind of a tricky horse to ride. Sean obviously does a good job with him. He's won three races with him, and he's a horse that's really moved forward since we've had him. I mean, we got him last summer. He was a little tough to get back to the races. Once we got him back to the race, he's been ultra consistent for us in Zyots, and it was a big victory. And you know, like I said, he's all hard. He shows up to and gives you what he's got every time. And he really had to dig in the last 16th of a mile to get it done the other day. But like I said, Sean Bridgemont does a really good job with this colt. And he's been good to us this winter, this spring.
No, Sean had you were a big part of it. Sean had a fabulous meet, and really to win a riding title. And granted, he might have been second to Miguel Mena had Miguel not broken the ankle, but still, for Sean to, this was a big winter for him. So I was very pleased. Big fan of his.
Me too. I was happy for him, and obviously, there's three guys, you know, that were kind of duking it out at the end there, and it worked out for Sean. So it was good, you know, that gives him some confidence moving forward. And, you know, obviously all riders need confidence, I guess, and it worked out good. I was happy for him.
Well, happy for you, Brad, and for all the sets of connections, and things are firing all cylinders as you get going at Indiana and New York, just looking good on all fronts and heading toward the Kentucky Oaks with Monomoy Girl and with Sassy Sienna. Pretty nice 1-2 punch.
Thanks, Steve, and hopefully we're talking soon.
Absolutely. Every Monday, it seems. Brad Cox,
yeah.
Everybody.
Thank
love
you.
It.
Have a good week.
You
have
too. We'll take the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, Shug McGahee is going to join us. Ron Moquette, we're going to swing around to the top of the hour. So Shug next and Randy Moss in this next half hour. 90 in, 90 to come at the races. Sirius XM back after this with Claude Ray to talk about his latest Hall of Fame inductee. I'm gonna quickly try to count up how many Shug has sent into the hall. It's unbelievable. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrisNet.com/APR. The BrisNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrisNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrisNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Bring
breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, celebrating Eddie Cochran. Bet Suge McGahee might have taken a girl to the bop, maybe. Some Eddie Cochran growing up.
Good morning, Suge.
Good morning, Steve.
Suge, I think they're going to have to. Are they going to build a McGahee wing in the Hall of Fame?
I hope so. Steve, that kind of brought tears to my eyes the other day when they told me she got in. I've been thinking about it. I thought she sure deserved a spot, but you never know.
Not only does Heavenly Prize get in, she will be the lone contemporary inductee. You know, there's going to be Pillars of the Turf, and there's going to be some historic review names added, but she will be the focus in August, Friday, August 3rd, Suge, and should be one more special occasion. I mean, you've escorted how many now in?
I would say that maybe four or five. Five, I think. We'll see. Easy Gore, Personal Instant, Lure, Inside Information, Heavenly Prize. So that's pretty good array.
Yeah, that's a pretty good run. And you bring up Inside Information, and Andy was on with us earlier, Andy Serling, and he, whenever either name comes up, he always reminds everybody of that day in 1993 when the two of them, Inside Information and Heavenly Prize, so closely associated, and within an hour, Suge, they both break their maiden. Go back to that day.
Well, we ran Inside Information first, and she won, and Mike Smith came back, and his eyes were kind of big. And then a couple races later, we ran Heavenly Prize. When he came back, his eyes were even bigger. And I stayed over and watched the matron, and she had run the same time as the matron, so I kind of went in there and nominated her to the Frisette, and luckily that worked out pretty good. Scotty had a filly that was going to be in there that was a good filly, and I think she had won the matron and scratched. So that made it, it was a short field, and it made it kind of where she was kind of the best. But that day, it was fun. There were two nice fillies, both of them obviously homebred, one of them private account, and the other one seeking the goal. I think that was Heavenly Prize was seeking a goal's first crop, maybe. And so it all kind of worked out. Inside Information was by private account, belonged to Denny Phipps, and Heavenly Prize belonged to Mr. Phipps, so everybody was happy.
You mentioned the Frisette, and you go on to win there. And then came the Breeders' Cup, and it obviously would have been a better scenario if it had been an East Coast or maybe a Kentucky circumstance for a Breeders' Cup that year. But you had to go to Santa Anita, and that little bit of an ask to head out there.
Yeah, I made a mistake that day, too. I told Mike to be able to, first time around two turns, I didn't know what, I didn't want her to, I knew it'd be competitive, and I didn't want her to go around one of those turns and, kind of blow the turn, as to say. And so I sort of told him to keep her down on the inside, and she did. And Penn K, and she was laying third, and Penn K and Delahoosie were in front of her, and just at the crack of the turn there was a little bit of an opening, and she hesitated just a little bit, and for $1 million that hole wasn't going to be there very long with Delahoosie and Penn K. So we kind of got stopped there and finished third to two pretty good two pretty good fillies. One of them ended up being a champion, and I think it was Mandela's. But like I say, when there was just a little crack, and she hesitated a little bit, and that was just enough for those two guys to say, "We, you know, you're in the wrong place, Mike." So, but that was probably a little bit of my fault. But like you say, you know, if we've been run back here at Belmont or something, it'd probably been a little bit different story.
Hey, back to the beginning with her, and when they get delivered, when an inside information and a heavenly prize come off the van, I mean, did they come to you at the same time, and what was she like as a young horse, and how quickly did you understand or think that there was going to be something here that could be special?
Well, yeah, I liked her right off the bat, Heavenly Prize. I mean, she was, she was just, when you put, they did both come at the same time along with a bunch of others, but they were all down with Mr. Whiteley and Camden. And so they were well thought of, and she was well thought of, and the way she looked and the way she handled herself and stuff made me think that maybe she's something pretty good. And I think I got her ready before, a little bit before she made her first start, and I got stopped with her for, I think she had some sort of a skin disease. We're going back a little bit far for me, but, and I had to back off of her a tad bit, but then, it all worked out fine. But she showed right off the bat that she might be something special, and obviously, we were pulling for Seeking the Goal too. So, it was all there in one package, and I did like her, and we liked her when we ran her. But like I say, I think she was ready to run a little bit sooner than I got to run her, and just something got in the way, nothing major, but just where I had to back off of her a little bit.
Well, she gets the winter off, and she comes back, and she had a little bit of, it took her a little bit of time to get going as a 3-year-old.
Well, it did. I was a little bit worried about that, and I ran her, ran her in Gulfstream, and, then I remember running her in a test, and she didn't run that bad, but she didn't win, and Mr. Phipps, what are you going to do with her now? So I'm going to run her in Alabama, and he kind of looked at me funny, but at that time, I think Alabama was probably 10 days later. And then the test, we used to open on Wednesday, and the test was all on opening day. And then we ran her back, and Lakeway was in there, and Lakeway had beaten Inside Information in the Mother Goose. And I thought their crowd was a little bit rowdy that day, so I was very pleased with Heavenly Prize's race in the Alabama to beat Lakeway and to go on and be 3-year-old filly champion.
She demolished Lakeway. Wins by
she
seven.
Some,
and
yeah, she made some kind of a move going down the backside, and Mike said, he said I had so much horse. He said I was just, let's get this thing over with now, and that's what he did.
And it's funny because the Alabama, that mile and a quarter for 3-year-old fillies, we carry on every year toward Derby about the first time that the boys are going to run a mile and a quarter, and there never is the same hubbub about fillies going a mile and a quarter for the first time. And it's a great time on the calendar in terms of their maturity. And it's not unusual for somebody to just, for all the dots to connect. And it turns out that this is something that, being by Seeking the Gold, she was out of the Nijinsky, the unraced Nijinsky mare. Oh, what a dance. And she had every reason to relish the mile and a quarter.
Yeah, well, we did know that she wanted to run a distance ground. She was going to get better with that and two turns. And, that race up there just sort of hit her right between the eyes that, this is a perfect spot for her, and we'll see what happens from there. And, as you say, she'd gotten off to a bit of a slow start, so it was sort of thrilling to see to see her show the ability that we always thought she had in that race. But like I say, she'd gotten up there and she'd worked over the training track in between the races, just a slow 5/8, and you know, then and came out of it good. We took her over there, and I was really anxious to see how she would run. And you know, I think Mr. Phipps was sort of in the same boat that, you know, I thought this filly was going to be a little bit better than she's shown. And then that day she showed, and from then on she showed exactly what she was.
You know, she crushes the Gazelle, and then comes back and the Beldame dispatches that field, and Pat Day takes over at that point and rides her the rest of her career. You went to the distaff and didn't go favored, but still upset by Proctor.
Well, and the reason Mike Smith didn't ride her on is because they wanted to ride her, and I told them they weren't going to take off Sky Beauty to ride her. And so we went to Louisville. Pat Day, you know, we called a race with no pace, and we just didn't get up. I had a filly of Denny's called Dispute that had just won the Spinster. And I thought that, and she, you know, she came out of that race with a really bad bruise in her foot, and I couldn't run her back in the Breeders' Cup. But she had speed. It might have been a little bit of a different story if she had been in there to kind of make the pace a little bit more honest for Heavenly Prize. But you know, that's not taking anything away from Tom's filly. She ran a great race that day, and you know, we weren't able to catch her.
Now, it comes back as an older horse, and you go on a tear after prepping at Oaklawn, and you know, she got beat at 1-5 by Halo America, but then she goes on a run, the Apple Blossom, the Hempstead, the Gopher Wand, and the Morris, and four grade ones as an older horse, and she really is the definition of, well, you know, when a filly gets good, they stay good.
Yeah, well, I was a little surprised when we took her to Hot Springs and she got beat down there for the first time. And, you know, but, you know, looking back on her now, she was probably one that maybe just needed a race or so after her 3-year-old year too. And you know, was happy to win the Apple Blossom. A few years back, I just got beat in the race. And so Apple Blossom, we didn't know what a bucket list was then, but it was on the bucket list then. And so I was glad to win it, and then to come back, and you know, her two races at Saratoga were really dominant races. They were two turn races, the you know, that she was able to win, and that was, she liked that racetrack up there, and she liked the two turns, and so it all worked out good. And then, you know, then when we got to the Breeders' Cup, you know, the race track came up muddy here, and she didn't really favor a muddy track. And, of course, Inside Information loved it. But she ran a good race that day to be second.
She did. And then, you know, she had gotten beat by Serena Song in the Beldame, and no shame in that. And then, of course, finished the year in the Don and ran into Cigar, of course, and Wekiva Springs.
Well, yeah, we decided to keep her in train a little bit because to give Mr. Phipps some action. He was getting up there a little bit, and you know, we ran her down there, and she finished third against the Colts. And obviously, I mean, I don't think she was beat four lengths or something to Cigar and Wekiva Springs. So that wasn't any slouch race. But if I can remember back, maybe she might have bled a little bit that day. And so we just decided that maybe we better go on and stop her. But she also had gotten beat as a 3-year-old down there on that track. So, you know, she might not have favored that track too much either. But, you know, she was 5 years old, and that was stretching a little bit for the Phippses. Usually after their 4-year-old year at that time, you know, they would stop them, and that was fine with me. We stopped her and bred her, and you know, she did fine as a broodmare. So it was all that, you know, it's not like, you know, with them, when they go home, you're going to see the offspring, you know, to where in a lot of operations you go home and you see the offspring going through the sale at Keeneland.
You know, and you mentioned her as a broodmare, but interestingly, Oh What a Dance, she did get Oh What a Windfall later on. I mean, it took 5 years, but she got Heavenly Prize, and then really nothing came close after that. Even, you know, Hunting Hard was next, the full brother, and he was okay. He won a few times, but, and Oh What a Windfall was all right. I mean, but not.
Oh, well, Windfall was all right. She was just spotty. You know, the first time I ran her, I liked her. She got beat 30 lengths or something. I ran her back, and she won by that far. And her next start, she won the matron. You know, so, I mean, it was kind of, you know, when you'd run her, and she would run good, and then you'd run her, and she'd run bad. You know, and I never could quite understand all that. And then she's got a foal that I had sold called Overwhelming, one over the jumps at Tri over the weekend that I sold to Jack Fisher. He was a bit of a handful too, but you know, I think that's something he really liked, was going down there where he could be outside. He was a stall walker and be outside and that kind of stuff. So, and like I say, Oh What a Dance, she makes you scratch your head a little bit.
Well, Shug, before we wrap up, and we're going to listen to the Alabama, but when you think of her and you put her in context with all your horses, you said you teared up a little bit. You obviously, you know, have a special, you know, special place for her.
Well, I did. You know, I liked her, and you know, being by Seeking the Gold, who I really liked and enjoyed training, and you know, she had a pretty good record. To win a grade one, two, three, and 4 year old, and I thought she deserved a spot. But she was a little bit, you know, she was, like you say, in the early 90s, and Brian Luck and Havre de Grace and those things are, you know, a little bit more, you know, local now than she was, and maybe on people's minds a little bit more. But so I was happy, and I was grateful that she got in, and I look forward to her day in August.
Well, just looking at the chart, 14 grade one starts, and she only won grade ones. That's of course, she only ran in one grade two, the prioress, but after her maiden win, she participated in 14 grade ones, and she won 8 of them. Never off the board in the others or ever in her career. And the latest Hall of Famer for the Phipps family and for Shug McGahee. Shug, we're going to have Randy Moss join us after we listen, so I won't come back to you. But thanks as always, and hang on if you want to listen to Tom Durkin's call of the 1994 Alabama Stakes Heavenly Prize.
All right, Steve, thanks.
Thank you.
And they're off. Lady Rako veered in a bit at the start, and so did Lakeway. Two Altazano came out smoothly, and she's gone directly to the lead. But Plenty of Sugar is right there as Heavenly Prize tucks in behind the lead. Here comes Sovereign Kitty, and Lakeway is there four wide as they head into the clubhouse turn here at Saratoga. Two Altazano has a short lead. Sovereign Kitty is pressing, and Lakeway's right up there, taking a bit wide going into the turn. Heavenly Prize is saving ground throughout, tucked away at the inside and fourth. Plenty of Sugar alongside her in fifth. Then Long Shot, Jade Flush, and a big break back to the trailer, Lady Rako. An easy first quarter here for Two Altazano, 23 and 4, fifth seconds. Sovereign Kitty was right there with her, and Lakeway is poised, sitting just off the lead on the outside third. And just to her inside, Heavenly Prize, who's had a ground-saving trip so far. Then it's Plenty of Sugar, Jade Flush, and Lady Rako at the back of the pack. The fractions are easy in the early going, the half mile and 48 seconds flat. Sensing the urgency of the slow pace, now DeSormo moves Lakeway to the lead. Lakeway takes the lead with 5 furlongs to run in this Alabama. Sovereign Kitty is there. Two Altazano is back in third. Now Mike Smith angles Heavenly Prize to the outside for clear running in fourth as the field passes the half-mile pole. And Lakeway is cruising on the lead. She leads now by three. Heavenly Prize has moved into second now on the outside. Sovereign Kitty is back running in third. Two Altazano is tailed off badly. Then it's Lady Reiko moving through toward the inside. It's Lakeway the leader, but now Heavenly Prize is going to test her. Lakeway tested by Heavenly Prize. Heavenly Prize with a stiff challenge for the lead, and Heavenly Prize is taken over. Heavenly Prize is in front at the back, at the top of the stretch, and Lakeway is trying to battle back valiantly, but it is Heavenly Prize who passes the eighth pole with the lead by a length and a half. Lakeway is being left behind in second here at the Graveyard of Champions. Heavenly Prize is going on to win it, and she'll win here by five.
There was no question about this.
There it is, and just you could even hear the surprise in Durkin's voice at how distinct and powerful the move was that took over the Alabama as Heavenly Prize powers away, and from that point goes on to win another six grade ones, and now to the Hall of Fame with her. And the daughter is seeking the gold. I mean, Shug, it's always so much fun to have these opportunities with Shug, who you know, brings you literally right back to the moment with all these great horses that he, you know, he gets the well-molded clay and then puts the finishing touches on. And so five Hall of Famers for Shug. I appreciate his visit as always. We got Randy Moss standing by, and I was amused and surprised when Randy said he was in Saratoga. He was 10-15 minutes away from me this morning when I reached out to him, and he's on his way out of town. But I figured you were somewhere because you could be doing anything. You could be doing biathlon coverage. You could be getting ready for the NFL draft. Getting ready for the Derby broadcast. Randy Moss, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? I was actually here at Saratoga to do a show jumping voiceover. NBC has me doing some equestrian sports as well, since I'm pigeonholed as a horse guy. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So I'm on my way out of town now.
Well, I appreciate you taking a few minutes, and I thought it was important to get in touch with you in the wake of the Arkansas Derby, your home track, and certainly some unique aspects to the figures that not just come out of this week, but really it seems like every year in the Arkansas Derby, Randy, the closing times in particular, the winner always seems to come home fast.
Yeah, you know, Magnum Moon, despite running diagonally through the final quarter mile to the finish, records a final eighth of a mile of 11.99 seconds, and it raises eyebrows all across the country. But, I mean, Steve, this has been going on for decades. I was born and raised in Hot Springs, essentially grew up around the racetrack. I began handicapping for the Little Rock newspaper when I was 13 years old. I know a little bit about the situation at Oaklawn Park. And this actually goes back to the summer of 1980, all right? I was working in the publicity department at Louisiana Downs, and a fellow named John White, who right now is the Santa Anita odds maker, formerly of HRTV, wealth of experience of horse racing, one of the key horse racing students in America, at the time was calling charts at Louisiana Downs, and we became good friends, and he always wanted to come to Oaklawn Park. So I took him home with me one day in the summer. Oaklawn Park was obviously shuttered up, and I introduced him to W.T. Bishop, and we went up to the press box in the middle of a torrential downpour. And the first thing that John White said when he looked out over the Oaklawn Park track from the press box view, he said, "Oh, my God, the stretch is downhill." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Look, it's downhill." And obviously they weren't maintaining the racetrack surface. The torrential downpour had washed gullies into the surface. And he said, "Look at the water." And the water was flowing like a river from the top of the stretch to the finish. And I hadn't really thought about it before. I had a summer job a couple of years earlier for an engineering company in Hot Springs that also happened to be the Oaklawn Park Engineering Company. So I asked a couple of friends of mine to verify that for me, and they did. They surveyed it, and sure enough, there is a minor, but when you're talking about fifths of a second, it can be a significant downhill slope to the Oaklawn Park stretch. And this really came into the national spotlight 4 years later. In 1984, the filly Althea, who to this day might be the best three-year-old filly I've ever seen, won the Arkansas Derby by 7 lengths, came into Kentucky Derby, and her final eighth of a mile in the Arkansas Derby on the chart was 11 2/5 seconds. And my good friend Andy Beyer and Steve Crist and Steve Davidowitz were all at Churchill Downs with their stopwatches trying to time the video replay. It's impossible. It's impossible. There's no way a front-running filly can run the last eighth of a mile in 11 2/5 seconds. And I'm like, guys, it's accurate. The stretch is downhill. So when you see the final furlong times in the Arkansas Derby at any mile in an eighth race at Oaklawn Park, you kind of have to keep that in mind and sort of mentally add a couple of fifths of a second, because there is a slope when they come barreling down the stretch.
Now, this conversation crops up after every Arkansas Derby. The discussion is kicking around at the Thorograph message board with Jerry Brown's, all of Jerry's kids. And the other topic that I needed you to define was the pace adjustment that you needed to make, because, of course, yeah, there was a distinct 9-length difference between Magnum Moon's finish time and that of City of Light in the handicap half an hour earlier.
Right. I mean, I work with Andy Beyer and Mark Hopkins and Dick Girardi and a whole host of others in making the Beyer speed figures. Obviously, Oaklawn Park is one of my home tracks. In a perfect world, when you make speed figures for any big day, they're pretty cut and dried. You don't have to really introduce, you know, a whole lot of judgment to them. That's what you'd like to see. That's the way it was for the Santa Anita Derby and the way it was for Bluegrass and the way it was for the Wood Memorial. But unfortunately, when you do the Arkansas Derby and you notice the pace discrepancy between the Oaklawn Handicap and the Arkansas Derby, and then you see that if you take the figs at face value, Magnum Moon gets a speed figure in the low 90s. I think it was like a 92 or something, which would mean that like the first 5 or 6 finishers in the race would all run lower than expected. Then you know that the slow pace had an impact. We see that mostly in turf racing. It's very problematic at times in making speed figures in turf races, because the paces of those races can just be all over the board. Usually dirt racing is a little more straightforward, but in the Arkansas Derby, it was necessary to make a pace adjustment to Magnum Moon's final figure. At that point, really all you have to go on is what the horses had been running. And if you assume that Quip ran the same race in the Arkansas Derby that he ran in the Tampa Bay Derby, and he had the same kind of trip, two wide stalking trip, if you figure that Solomini ran about his normal race, even though he was a little wide, and the same thing for, you know, Steve Asmussen's stretch runner, then Magnum Moon could be projected for the final Beyer speed figure that he got. And that's what we had to do.
It makes perfect sense, and especially when you bring in a horse. To me, the key anchor is Combatant and Solomini, because they've been super consistent. They're both, you know, kind of, Solomini particularly as a grinder is going to run at that same even quarters that frankly makes him a board candidate for Derby. And so it is projectable. I thought it made perfect sense, but some people, you know, that understand the relationship between beaten lengths and the clock, they wondered, how can it be a 98 if he ran a second and a half slower than City of Light? So I thought this would be a good exercise.
There are two ways that it could be done, Steve. We could just take the final time completely at face value. Never make any adjustments like that for slow-paced races. And then in doing so, it would be essentially the pure speed figure, and we would be asking all the horse players out there to make their own adjustment. We'd be asking all the horse players to look at that speed figure in the Arkansas Derby and say, well, you know, obviously it wasn't a 92 because the pace slowed things down, and they would just sort of have to make that adjustment on their own. When we get into a situation like that, we like to try to give the race as representative a figure to the horse's abilities as we can. We'd rather not do it. We'd rather just leave the figs alone. You know, I try to do that every day. Andy Beyer jokes that I'm the Justice Scalia of speed figures. I'm a strict constitutionalist. I do not like to make changes like that. But, I mean, sometimes you have to.
Well, we are on the other side of the lead up, Randy, at this point. And while I've got you, a couple of follow up questions. Being a Hot Springs native and the announcement by Lewis Sella on Wednesday, minutes before the draw, the change in the calendar, going back to a February start and running all the way to Derby Day. And it'll certainly guarantee better weather than we saw this past week. I was there. It was, you know, spring is going to come at some point for the country. But your thoughts about this maneuver and what it might be angling toward?
Well, the younger generation is making its presence felt at Oakland, Steve. You know, Charles Sella, the longtime patriarch at Oakland, passed away last year. Lewis Sella, his son, has taken over the reins at Oakland. And you know, I not only was a handicapper and a turf rider at Oakland Park, I was their director of operations for basically a two-year period, working with Charles Sella, working with Eric Jackson at one point in the mid-1990s. And back then, I put on a full court press to try to get Charles to put in a turf course at Oakland. I mean, that's the direction in which American racing was headed. It was trending toward more turf races. The better stables had more turf horses. And the technology of taking care of turf courses in colder than temperate climates had improved to the point that Oakland could now run on a turf course for a longer period of time than it had been possible in the previous decades. I thought I made a great case, and Charles immediately shot me down. So it's going to be interesting to see now that they have lengthened the meeting until Kentucky Derby Day, whether they utilize those warmer days in April and actually consider putting in a turf course. It's the only major racetrack in America. It depends on how you classify major racetracks. But I think you can say Oakland's the only major racetrack in America that doesn't have a turf course, and it could be a perfect opportunity. It's going to be interesting, too, Oakland competing head-to-head with Keeneland for the very first time. Charles Sella cut his teeth as a child, going against his father's wishes to stay away from horse racing and sneaking over to Keeneland during his summer breaks, where W.T. Bishop took him under his wing. When Charles's father passed away and he took over the reins of Oakland Park in the late 1960s, he